Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Tracy Walder's new book, The Unexpected Spy, From the CIA to the FBI, My Secret Life, Taking Down Some of the World's Most Notorious Terrorists, reads like the show Bible from Homeland, only her story is real. Walder helped crack one of the FBI's biggest intelligence cases involving a defense engineer who was giving tech information to China. She also saw her work manipulated for political gain. Walder was a staff operations officer in the Weapons of Mass Destruction Office of the CIA's Counterterrorism Center. She was one of the people responsible for finding out whether Saddam Hussein had WMD. In fact, she never found a connection between Iraq and the terrorists she was tracking. Yet she and other officers watched the Bush administration make these false claims, which led to war. In her new book, Walder writes, "No matter what we reported to the administration, they turned it around, turned it inside out, and spat it back out into some non-truth version of what had been said." It was a roller coaster career that started right after college. She went from a sorority sister to spy. Walder's memoir tracks her work assessing global terror threats, traveling to war zones, as well as her work after the CIA and the counterintelligence at the FBI. And Tracy Walder joins us now. Tracy, welcome to All of It.
Thank you for having me, Allison.
So whenever anyone writes a memoir, they have to think about the privacy of people they're writing about, whether or not to use pseudonyms, that sort of thing. Now, you're writing about your time in the CIA doing classified work. What else did you have to take into account?
So obviously, yes, I did change everyone's name in the book. But the other thing I had to take into account was not to divulge national security secrets. So I submitted my book to the Publications Review Board for their review. It took a couple times back and forth to get it to a way that we felt would be manageable for people to read and still understand. But I had to be very mindful of that.
Yeah, if you look at the book and you open pages, it's redacted in some places. Some pages, maybe even half a page is blacked out. How much was that a challenge for you as a writer to tell your story, but to know that you couldn't provide certain pieces of information? What was that editing process like?
So it was a little bit tedious, although I feel really, really grateful. There are a few women who had come before me who had written books and had a really difficult time getting through the Publications Review Board. I felt that mine was rather quick. I received my first copy of edits back from them in about 4 months. However, they had completely redacted three entire chapters. So imagine three chapters completely redacted. And they don't tell you why. They won't tell you why. So you have to get sort of creative and start to think about why did they redact this, and sent it back. It came back with just two chapters redacted, which, okay, we could work with that. And then sent it back again. And it was just, you know, kind of those piecemeal redactions throughout the book. And we felt that that really didn't take away too much from the reader's experience. So we decided to move forward with it the way it was.
Tracy, when did you first become interested in the CIA?
So, you know, that's a great question. This was when I first entered or interviewed. It was the mid-90s. So we have to remember pop culture was really different then than it was now. You know, now we have Homeland, Quantico, Criminal Minds, all those things that sort of the younger set is exposed to. I didn't have any of that. So I don't know if it's that I wanted to join the CIA, whereas it was more I was interested in fighting terrorism. And I think that really my sort of watershed moment was in 1997 when I watched Peter Bergen's interview with Osama bin Laden.
That is one of those I think it's a real milestone for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's one of those moments that a lot of people were awakened to what was possible and who was out there thinking of various things and various ways to threaten the United States. What was it about the interview?
So the one thing that really sort of struck out to me is I think I was 19 when that interview aired. And I think for me, you know, I think everyone focuses on themselves a little bit. How does this affect me? And I think the idea of terrorism became a lot less nebulous to me in that I know he issued his fatwa against Americans in that interview. But the other thing that he said was that all of this was the fault of the Jews. And I'm Jewish. So I think for me, in a strange way, it humanized it, right? It made it more about myself and my community and my friends and my family. And I think that was the real turning point.
Once, you applied to the CIA, you were still in college. Once they became interested in you, can you describe what that vetting process was like?
Sure. So my vetting process was obviously a little unique. I applied sort of the latter half of my junior year. And, you know, there's a few hoops that you have to jump through. The first is sort of a large group interview that they have at a local hotel. I had contracted food poisoning that day, so that was a really great experience with a trash can by me being interviewed by the CIA. And then once you make it through that, you are sent to Virginia for sort of more rigorous testing, medical testing, psychological testing, math testing, writing testing, and then obviously the polygraph. Then once you make it through that, then you receive a conditional offer of employment. And I received my November of my senior year of college, which was obviously contingent upon my graduation.
There was an interesting story, if I'm remembering right, about your polygraph test.
Yes.
You share that?
For me, I was, I guess what you would say, a really good kid. I really didn't engage in too many risky behaviors that I think a lot of folks may do when they're in college, particularly when they're in sororities or fraternities. And my polygrapher had a really hard time, I guess, believing me that I had never used a banned substance, drugs. And I think because he kept pressing me on it, my anxiety was obviously going through the roof. I was fairly young. And a lot of that is sort of biometrics that they're looking at. And he kept saying, you know, you're lying, you're lying, you're lying. And this process was probably about 4 hours. And I think at the end of it, I was just done. And he said, this is inconclusive. You're going to have to come back tomorrow. And I remember going back to my hotel room and saying, I'm done. I'm not going any further with this. I'm done. And my recruiter called and sort of encouraged me to come back the next day. And so I did. And he, you know, same type of questioning. And he walked out of the room at one point. He must have been gone for 45 minutes, an hour. And I actually fell asleep in the chair. I think at that point it was because I hadn't slept the whole night. You know, I was really obviously worried. I cared about getting the job. And he came back and he's like, you know what, we're going to go ahead and pass you simply because of the fact that I fell asleep. It's hard to know if really I did pass and they were sort of just playing a game with me. I don't know that I'll ever know the answer to that question. But it was obviously a very stressful experience.
My guest is Tracy Walder. We're talking about her memoir, The Unexpected Spy. You were working at the CIA for about a year, and on September 11th, by the time September 11th, 2001 came around. What was September 12th, 2011 like for you?
It was a completely different time. It's almost like I could pin down my life before September 11th and then my life after September 11th. Obviously, you know, initially when the attack happened, I would say there was an overwhelming sense of guilt. We should have stopped this. I think I still carry some of that guilt today. But I think, you know, it was sort of just move on. Let's get these folks. Let's stop the next attack. And so really you sort of had this new sense of purpose, I guess. And the pace of the work became obviously extremely frenetic. And I kind of began working a very compartmentalized program there. And I think it really caused me to grow up very quickly.
You describe your work in what was called the Vault. Mm-hmm. What was the Vault and what was its role?
So the Vault, and that's part of the section of my book that's a little bit redacted, but I was very surprised, actually, that the CIA even allowed, to be honest with you, parts of it in. So the Vault was a program that I was read into on September 10th, 2001, and what being read into means is you're sort of being given a clearance into a special compartment, if you will, of information. And I remember being naive and saying, you know, we're not going to have to kill anyone with this. This will be fine. And, you know, the head of the program sort of laughing at me and saying, no, not unless there's a big attack. So obviously I had to do a little soul searching. And, you know, basically what the Vault program was sort of really identifying terrorists and targets in Afghanistan. And I guess you can say taking them out, neutralizing them. So that's really what, in kind of a broad summary, what that program was.
You write in the book, it was midnight, my third night in the vault, when I first met George Tenet, the director of the CIA. You had the opportunity to meet many leaders during this historic time, George Tenet, President Bush. What did you learn about leadership during this time?
So I would say what I really learned about leadership came from George Tenet, to be honest with you. In my opinion, he was really a true leader during that time. I think I mentioned in the book that, you know, he regularly brought us donuts. He brought us Thanksgiving dinner from what I think had to be his own table at home. What I learned is that a true leader supports their employees in a hands-on way. He was constantly in there with us. He was constantly sitting next to us. He was constantly asking us questions. And he got to know us as human beings. And I think that taught me a lot about leadership. It's not just because you're at the top of an organization doesn't mean that you lead that organization physically from the top. He really got into the weeds with us, and I'll always be grateful for that.
Now, you write in the book about you personally not believing in enhanced terror techniques, and that there's been a lot of discussion about these, but that you also don't believe that those officers who used them were bad people, that they were doing what they thought was right to protect the country. As you've thought about this over time, how did you hold those two ideas in your mind? Knowing, and I've heard other intelligence officers say, yeah, they don't work. It doesn't work. How did you hold those two ideas in mind? You knowing it doesn't work, but knowing that people with whom you work and people you respect use them because they thought they were doing the right thing.
So I think at the time, right, it's really easy to sort of be a Monday morning quarterback and sort of reflect on that, you know, 15, 20 years later. Obviously, they don't work. We know that. And obviously, it's an unconscionable thing to do to someone. But at the same time, I think there was this urgency to stop future attacks. And I truly think that the people who were using those were doing so trying to stop future attacks. I'm looking at the purpose, right, upon which they employed them. And their purpose, you know, was not to necessarily even kill terrorists. Their purpose was to find out when the next attack was going to be. And you kind of have to look at what the point of enhanced interrogation is. The point of enhanced interrogation is to get the person to become submissive so that you can ask them questions about when the next attack will occur. I don't support that. I don't agree with that. But if you just boil it down to that, I can understand why they were doing what they were doing, although upon reflection, it was not the right thing to do.
My guest is Tracy Walder. The name of her memoir is The Unexpected Spy, From the CIA to the FBI, My Secret Life of Taking Down Some of the World's Most Notorious Terrorists. As I mentioned in the intro, you were part of the Weapons of Mass Destruction Office at the Counterterrorism Center. What was your work there?
So the Weapons of Mass Destruction Group was sort of even more subcategorized than that. I worked small-scale weapons of mass destruction. So we're talking more like biological poisons and very easy to procure chemical weapons. So anthrax, ricin, botulinum, things that are really easy to make, procure, sell, and utilize. So that's more what I did.
When you watched Colin Powell give the speech to the UN in support of the invasion of Iraq based on research done by you and many of your other officers, and the way you heard that research used or changed or manipulated, what was specifically different?
That he in the chart that he used?
Mm-hmm.
So in the chart that he used was created by the team that I was on simply to keep our targets straight, if you will. You know, a lot of times there's a lot of people floating around in a lot of different places of the world. And so sometimes it helps to visually see them all in one place. And what we were doing was sort of looking at the person who we believed was sort of the lead procurer of these weapons for Al-Qaeda, and then who his henchmen were, where were they, what attacks might they have. And so for us, that was really the point of that chart. However, the person that was at the top of our chart, it was speculated that perhaps he traveled through Iraq at one point, which we never really thought was a big deal. Really, what intelligence had always told us was that, you know, Saddam Hussein is a dictator. Dictators and terrorists typically don't mesh well simply because they both undermine each other's authority. And so we just assume that it was almost like he was transiting the airport, if you will. And we never put too much stock in that, but that was on our chart. And so when someone from the president's office had come through, he wanted that chart. And that wasn't an unusual occurrence per se. So we didn't think twice about it. But one of the biggest things that was changed on the chart was the title of the chart. You can Google it today. And the title of the chart says Iraq's terrorist connections. And that's not what the title of the chart was. The chart was Al-Qaeda's poison network. So I would say that's the sort of the biggest change.
What did you feel when you saw that?
So initially, our thoughts were actually for the protection of our assets. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things in the Directorate of Operations at the CIA is that you protect your sources at all costs. And I think at that point, we felt that perhaps we had failed them because, you know, there were faces on there and locations on there and cells on there that I think it would have been relatively easy for Al-Qaeda to figure out who was, in essence, for lack of a better word, squealing on them. And that directly could lead to a drying up of information, a killing of assets. And I think at least that's where my mind went first, was the protection of our assets.
My guest is Tracy Walder. The name of her memoir is From the CIA to the FBI. We could talk about the CIA for hours, but I do want to talk about the FBI a little bit, your time working at the FBI. You had one of your most successful professional accomplishments, and you were involved in the arrest of Chi Mak, the Chinese-born American citizen who was found guilty of conspiring to share defense technology. But you also faced incredible sexism at the FBI in a way that it seemed not the same at the CIA. Why do you think there was that difference?
At the time, I don't think I understood why. I was a little naive. But now, you know, just upon reflecting on that, the CIA is, you know, at its core is an intelligence gathering organization. That's their job. That will always be their job. The FBI is a law enforcement organization. That is their tasking. And that's never going to change about the two. And I think that those two careers breed two different mindsets. And I think at that point in my life, I was naive about the fact that the mindsets would be so different. So I think at its core, that's why.
When you think back on your career, what is the thing that you are most proud of?
That is an excellent question. I would say probably the thing that I'm the most proud of and that probably had the largest impact was my time in the vault.
Because?
Because I think I was actively able to destabilize Al-Qaeda's leadership structure and ultimately perhaps prevent future attacks.
Your story has been bought by ABC to be turned into a drama. Where is it in development? Do we know?
So right now it's just in the development stages with two production companies, Calamity Jane and Timberman Beverly.
And right now you're no longer a spy. Aside from having TV shows made, what's your day like?
So after I left the FBI, I became a history teacher, which is actually what I had always wanted to be. And I taught for about 14 years, 10 of which were spent at one of the largest all-girls schools in the U.S. And I created a foreign policy and terrorism course for them. I guess I created my own sort of intelligence farm. Some of them have gone on to careers in intelligence, the State Department, and the FBI. I recently left teaching there to serve on the board of directors for Girl Security, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization designed at developing scholarly curriculum for girls at the high school level to encourage discourse amongst the subject and also to show, you know, young women that the types of jobs that they can have in these fields if they're so inclined.
The name of the book is The Unexpected Spy, From the CIA to the FBI, My Secret Life, Taking Down Some of the World's Most Notorious Terrorists. Tracy Walder, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.